Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the May 23rd edition of Speedway Digest, Thursday Night Thunder, the most hardcore motorsports program on the internet. This is episode 162 of the series, and since I just pressed play on my intro, I'm expecting it to interrupt me any second now. Anyway, yes, we are considering 162, even though 161 went down.
Hi, this is Jason Vines, author of What Did Jesus Drive, and you're listening to Thursday Night Thunder on the Speedway Digest Radio Network.
He's probably going to say it one more time. So,
hi, this is Jason Vines, author of What Did Jesus Drive? And you're listening to Thursday Night Thunder on the Speedway Digest Radio Network.
Let's hope those are the only technical remnants of the night. I know that probably aren't, but we are going to hope anyway. I'm your host, Adam Jason Sinclair, and on tonight's program, we'll be delving into the wonderful world of competitive eating. At 5'3" tall on the outside and 6'12" tall on the inside, Mary Bowers is one of Major League Eating's most recognizable personalities. Orphaned at birth, Mary was adopted by a multicultural family and raised in the eastern plains of Colorado. Surrounded by an abundance of potatoes, corn, and cows, Bowers grew to discover that the small town food festivals of her childhood were an unexpected source of inspiration.
Hi, this is Jason Vines, author of What Did Jesus Drive? And you're listening to Thursday Night Thunder on the Speedway Digest Radio Network.
I did only push the button twice, I assure you. After a brief detour through Arizona, Mary found her way to California, where she caught the attention of the fashion industry and began modeling for brands like Kika Paprika, Brick Boy Fashions, and Red Tag Crazy. In 2011, she made her debut in the competitive eating stage at the West Coast Hot Dog Eating Championship in Orange County, California. Less than 1 year later, she became one of the top 50 professional eaters in the world, entering the Major League Eating ranks at number 47. Mary made sports history as the first ever woman's wildcard competitor in the 97-year history of the Nathan's Famous International Hot Dog Eating Contest on July 4, 2012 in Brooklyn, New York. Since then, the foodie fashionista has appeared on ESPN, Fox News, CBS News, and Playboy TV, and it's been featured in publications such as Marie Claire Australia, the Los Angeles Times, and the Goshi Register, among many others. She's also been featured in Palm Beach Happening when I did the Masters of Mastication series, and she helped me out quite a bit with that. When not working, Bowers gives her time to charitable causes. She's been recognized by the U.S. House of Representatives, the State Senate of California, and the City of Los Angeles for her efforts in nutrition education and hunger relief. We are now pleased to hopefully welcome Mary Bowers back to the program, and let's hope there aren't any more technical issues this evening, at least nothing major. Hello, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. Got a few little computer weird things, but other than that, we're doing okay, at least the connection seems okay now. So, first off, congratulations on qualifying for the nation's famous hot dog eating contest. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you qualify for that event?
So each year, all of the people that you see on ESPN on the broadcast on the 4th of July have to win their round. That goes for the men, that goes for the women, and the top person in each round from, I believe, 14 qualifying cities around the country earn their position for the finals on the 4th of July to compete at the big show. A big prize for the for the finals is $10,000, so definitely going to give it my best come July 1st.
And does being a professional eater ever ruin certain food for you?
There are certain foods where I limit my consumption to once a year, and that might be at the contest. Thankfully, hot dogs I still enjoy from time to time, so I will still indulge on those throughout the year. But other things I probably will reserve just for the contest so I can keep my edge.
And how many eating events do you compete in every year?
I think the most I've done in a season is about a dozen. Typically, Major League Eating season runs kind of in line with baseball. So we'll start up in the spring and then run through the mid-fall. And so our season is looking good. Lots of exciting events coming up. Next up for me is World Donut Day Eating Championship. We'll be in San Diego at the USS Midway eating donuts on June 7th.
What's your absolute favorite food?
I love cotton candy because it's like eating clouds from the sky. It's pink, which is also a signature color, but I received, I think, 13 different flavors of cotton candy from one of my friends for my birthday one year, and I think it was probably the best gift I've received. But don't tell that to any of the boys, because then they'll stop buying jewelry. So, yeah, cotton candy, hands down.
How do you prepare for an eating contest?
One bite at a time. So I think it's probably a big misconception that competitive eaters will train by eating large quantities of food. While that's sometimes true, that's not really the case. It's like training for any other sport. So you break it down into parts and pieces. Some days you're focused on technique, other days capacity, sometimes endurance. And the better your physical fitness in general, the better you're going to do in the contest. So I'll do things like cardio and resistance training just like other athletes. So competitive eating, I think, is really gaining recognition as a valid sport. And I think we've proven that over the last several years. And there's some really great up-and-coming talent as well.
For the past few years, I've had the opportunity to check out the corn eating contest here held at the Sweet Corn Fiesta at the South Florida Fair. There's a lot of different guys who do some different techniques there. Some of them do more of a shimmy thing. Other people just slam the corn through their teeth and drink lots of Kool-Aid and all sorts of other sticky things. What sort of tricks do you use to be a better professional eater?
Well, it really depends on the food. So I'll try and familiarize myself with the food the best that I can. Sometimes that is just breaking the food down. So, for instance, with hot dogs where it comes in two different parts, you have the meat and you have the bun. I'll play with just the sausage or I'll play with just the bun. There was one practice that I had that was not a very long practice. I just wanted to find out why the buns were slowing me down as much as they were. So I put a bun in a blender with a little bit of water to liquefy it. So that way I could get a better sense of, I guess as wine snobs would say, the bouquet of the bun. And I found that that was actually what was the issue, was the scent once it was in my mouth. So sometimes it's the surprising things where you learn the most. Didn't consume a lot because drinking bun water is not especially pleasant and doesn't do much in terms of technique, but it was definitely an informative day for me.
You mentioned that there's some up-and-coming people this year. Who's your favorite going into the contest for overall?
Favorites going into the contest, I think the dark horse in pretty much every contest, always just very interesting. Jeff Esper has been at it for several years. Not one that the crowds tend to watch at the beginning of a contest. He tends to be very calm in his eating style. So when you mentioned that there are certain athletes who will shimmy and jump and wiggle the whole time, Jeff is just a very, very calm, steady eater, does not cause a lot of drama. And so at the end of the contest, when he's eaten twice as much as the next person in the finishing order, people are always incredibly surprised. But I think he's definitely one to watch. There's also, of course, favorites coming back. Badlands Booker is there every single year. I know he's definitely a crowd favorite. And, of course, the great Joey Jaws Chestnut. I have to credit him for bringing so much attention and positivity to the sport.
What's your goal for these hot dog eating contests?
Hot dogs, I'd really like to hit 15. Personal best right now is 12 in the 10-minute contest. It can be incredibly challenging to post some of the higher numbers in New York just because it's incredibly difficult conditions outside usually. The weather is a factor, just like watching something like a horse race where the track will vary depending on the weather conditions. So New York on the 4th of July, it's always hot, it's usually humid, and that affects the consistency quality of the buns. And, of course, the travel and press schedule for that event being so large can also add to some of the challenges of the event. So definitely still working hard at trying to up my game, increase my endurance, and really be ready this time around.
I know you have your own company that focuses on stuff outside of the eating realm. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you do there?
Yeah, so Eat Be Merry is my company, and it started as a response to competitive eating fans in meet and greets after contests. I was getting a lot of questions and a positive response, one to the fashions that I was wearing. I do dress up in food-themed costumes in honor of the food discipline of the day for every contest, so I was receiving questions about that, but I was also receiving some interest in terms of just food in general, and so really wanted to put something together that was responsive to those fans. So I have taken up some public speaking, and I give presentations and keynote speeches at conferences and to businesses on how competitive eating and the mindset of a competitive eater can really help anybody in terms of mentality and success in life, even if you're not going to compete in my particular sport. There are other ways to apply it in business and or even at home, I think, just in terms of learning skills like flexibility, adaptability, endurance. There's quite a bit to be said for the mindset of competitive eaters.
And if people are interested in learning more about you, where would they go?
My website is eatbemerry.com, or you can follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at eatbemerry.
Well, we'd like to thank you very much for coming on the show this evening and wish you lots of luck in your next contest as well as in the hot dog eating contest on July 4th.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great night.
You too.
Once again, that was Mary Bowers of Eat Be Merry. She's on the International Federation of Competitive Eating circuit. She competes in roughly a dozen different challenges per year. And we'd like to thank you very much for coming on the program and for rescheduling after last week's debacle that we had on the program. Sometimes that happens. Fortunately, that was the first time we've had that many issues of the year, and I'm knocking on my little press board fake wood desk here and hoping that that is the last time that sort of thing will happen for a long time. Are you a race car driver, crew chief, pit member, track owner? Maybe you're just a huge fan of the sport. Contact either Michael Morali or myself to get your spot on the show. After all, you deserve your 15 minutes of fame, and we'd love to hear from you. We're currently working on a few different ideas for some future guests. We've got the chance of talking to some people after the Indianapolis 500-mile race in the next couple of weeks. We're hoping, and this is a big hope, we've mentioned it before, that to have Sebastian Bourdais on the program in the next couple of weeks to talk about the Indy 500 as well as the rest of the IndyCar season. And a little bit about the Karting for Kids Championship, which he is one of the chairs of. So hopefully we'll get that to happen. I have faith that that will be pretty cool. Let's go ahead and listen to a musical selection from Ron Pestana and the Pit Crew while we're moving on to the next segment. This is Last When You Crash.
in the mix. Throw your damn helmet, lose it in the pit. Take the cold hard facts. That's your last when you crash.
When you crash.
When you crash.
Once again, that was Last Train Crash by Ron Beltran and the Pit Crew. Hopefully it'll be a safe weekend of racing for all the sporting people that are involved in the racing world this weekend. The month of May is the height of racing season, as we all know. And this weekend is no exception. Andretti Autosport clearly found the perfect setup combination this afternoon during single car qualifying at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway as Robert McGinnis led the Indianapolis-based team to an emphatic sweep of the top four starting positions for tomorrow's Freedom 100 presented by Cooper Tires. McGinnis, age 19, from New York, New York, will start the pole position from the jewel in the crown of the Indy Lights presented by Cooper Tires season at the historic 2.5-mile Brickyard Oval with teammate Oliver Askew from Jupiter, Florida, alongside on the front row. Ryan Norman of Aurora, Ohio, and Indianapolis native Andretti, making his Indy Lights debut for his uncle Michael's team, will share row two of the grid tomorrow. Andretti has an awesome team, if you haven't figured that out. Jared Andretti has Robin Pemberton, the former head of the National Association of Stock Car Auto Racing, as his crew chief, which is pretty awesome, and it'll definitely be a change. I'm sure Jared Andretti has amazing things in his near future. Championship leader Rinus VK from Hoofddarn, Netherlands, will start a lowly ninth for Yokosuka Racing. Overnight rain and thunderstorms caused track activities to be delayed a little this morning, but the weather conditions roomed their back to ensure the Indy Lights teams were able to complete their scheduled 45 minutes of practice in advance of qualifying. McGinnis, who claimed his first pole and race win 2 weeks ago on the Indianapolis Grand Prix road course, laid down a marker by posting the fastest lap of 45.835 seconds for an average speed of 196.449 miles per hour. Warm and humid atmospheric conditions allied to blustery wind this afternoon that led several teams scratching their heads and surged lower speed for qualifying. But while some teams struggled, the first sign that Andretti Autosport had found the sweet spot for their stable Dallara AR-IL-15s came when Andretti, running third as the qualifying order was set by the reserve championship positions, jumped immediately to the top with a two-lap average of 192.822 miles per hour. Norman, who took the track sixth in line, was the first to eclipse Andretti's mark with a two-lap run at 193.033 miles per hour. Then, after the two began racing team, Pelpy drivers David Malukas from Chicago, Illinois, and Englishman Shobi Sowery posted respective averages of 191.304 miles per hour and 192.178 miles per hour. It was McGinnis' turn to take over the top. His first lap was the first to top the 194 mile per hour mark, and while his second lap was fractionally slower at 193.992 miles per hour, it was comfortable enough to establish himself at the top with only teammate Askew and VK yet to make their two-lap runs. Askew's first lap was fractionally quicker than McGinnis's. All bar Malukas, who had been unable to turn any meaningful laps during his practice due to a mechanical problem, his second lap wasn't quite fast enough to prevent McGinnis from claiming his second pole of the season. VK, the final runner, managed a two-lap average 192.124 miles per hour, mere fractions adrift of Junkos Racing's teammate, Dalton Callett, and Sowery. Good enough for only ninth on the grid. But if there was any consolation, his two laps were most consistent, separated by a scant 0.009 miles per hour of the entire field. Current NBC Sportsnet NTT IndyCar Series television broadcast analysts and former Indy Lights champions Townsend Bell and Paul Tracy will give the command to start engines for tomorrow's Freedom 100 presented by Cooper Tires at 12:55 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The green flag for the 40-lap race will be waved by two-time Indianapolis 500 champion and current race IndyCar race steward Ari Leyendijk at 1:05 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Now, it's kind of interesting that they have the race that early in the afternoon on a Friday. I'm not complaining. I will probably be home in time to watch it tomorrow, as we've had a relatively short day lately here in South Florida for my other primary job. So those will be kind of cool to see that. It's always really neat to see the other activity that takes place at the Indy 500 on Fridays as well. They've got the Carburation Day for the IndyCar Series, which is where they do their final minute, their last minute practice and some adjustments on the cars. They also have the pit practice, which is sort of like a pit competition, sort of like what they did for the All-Star Race a few years ago when the pit guys had their own little competition. I'm kind of hoping that NASCAR will bring that back in some time in the future, but they haven't been interested lately. But it's kind of neat to see how the pit guys go there in IndyCar. They are really, really fast, especially compared to some of the NASCAR guys, but they are a different breed of pit people as well. So it's kind of cool to see that sort of thing. I do not know the time that will be on television tomorrow. I know it will be televised tomorrow, whether it's on NBC Gold, which is their online subscription service, or NBC Sportsnet. I'm hoping it's on NBC Sports. There's also this weekend, the Coca-Cola 600 takes place in Charlotte at the Charlotte Motor Speedway in Concord, North Carolina. That is an all-day event. Actually, tonight, as I speak, they've got on-track activity there in Charlotte at 9 p.m. tonight. The ARCA race is taking place there at the Charlotte Motor Speedway. So be sure to tune into that as soon as this program is finished. Actually, I think this program will be done a little bit sooner this evening, but we'll see about that. So unfortunately, Michael Mullally is unable to join us this evening as she has other things to take care of there in Ephrata, Washington. But she will be back next week, and we're hoping to have a little bit larger group of guests next week. Hopefully somebody to help us review the Indy 500, whether it turn to one of the drivers or I bring in possibly one of the people who I've talked to in the past from the IndyCar or Sports Car podcast. So that would be cool if we could do that. Melissa Linker, of course, has been on the program to discuss that in the past. So we're hoping that we can do that. We're also hoping to have some more people on in the near future to discuss other events coming up on the NASCAR as well as the sports car schedules. We also have an arrangement that we've worked out with some of the Formula teams as well as the Trans Am teams to have their people on, as evidenced by past shows where we were able to talk to the champions from those series, the recent race winners. So we hope to do that in the near future as well. I'll return to that. As well as there's some local events going on that we might try and reach out once again to the track people there to try and get some people to talk to regarding local motorsports events here in South Florida. On that note, we're going to have the Super Chevy Show taking place there at Palm Beach International Raceway on Saturday. I did recently just purchase tickets for that event. So I'm going to be heading out there probably Saturday afternoon, maybe late afternoon, because I know that they've got racing that goes on until a little bit early evening. So I'm hoping to head out there probably 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday. I'll be sharing some pictures of that more than likely on the Facebook page for Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder. I might even share a little bit of that on SpeedwayDigest.com in the racing news section. We'll have to see how that goes. Because they don't send me as much stuff as I think they should from Palm Beach International, but that's a whole different deal there. So, again, we're trying to reach out to local tracks, local officials, and see how things go. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. Another thing that's going on this weekend, of course, is the Grand Prix of Monaco. That takes place early in the morning here, local time. So that'll be the first thing that's on the air on Sunday. It's a full day of racing. As we stated before, the first race, of course, will be on ESPN. That'll be the Grand Prix of Monaco. I believe that's at like 9 a.m. I did post that to my Twitter page earlier today. The next thing will be the Indy 500. And the day ends in Charlotte with the Coca-Cola 600. It will be a great weekend of racing. It's always a great weekend of racing around Memorial Day. And we hope that it'll be a clean thing of racing, and there won't be any issues whatsoever. So let's go ahead and wrap up this week's show. And thank you very much for listening. Be sure to check out past episodes of Thursday Night Thunder, as well as the other shows on the Speedway Digest Radio Network at SpeedwayDigestRadioNetwork.com. You can also check out the show on Facebook by searching for Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder in the search bar. I also invite you to read the articles covering all aspects of motorsports at SpeedwayDigest.com. We have posted some new news in the racing news as well as Speedway news sections in the past few days. There's also full coverage taking place of the Coca-Cola 600, and there's a little bit of extra coverage about Indianapolis this year because it appears that Speedway Digest actually has someone who's at the track every so often, so that's kind of interesting to get their perspective. Be sure to check that out at SpeedwayDigest.com. In addition, if you're a fan of South Florida, and who isn't, be sure to check out the latest news and information about our slice of paradise at my fairly new site now for Bob Plum's Fantastic Finds. We're getting new stuff every day. You can be found on Facebook, Twitter, and by heading to http://FaborPlumsFantasticFinds. That's FaborPlumsFantasticFinds.wordpress.com. Thank you again for listening, and we look forward to seeing you again next week in the Thunderdome as we discuss the major issues in the world of modern auto racing. Have a great night, and thanks again.